by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Welcome to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill, back for another round of fun and love and excitement. Hope you guys are having a good day. If you're outside stuck in the traffic right now, or you're trying to walk the dog or something, man, remember 2-3 days ago when it was sunny and 60-some degrees?
No.
Winter always does this to us. It, you know, gives us that little flash of what's to come for the next 6, 7, 8 months, which is going to be fabulous. And then you know, winter. Don't forget about me. You know, it's like a partner you're breaking up with, and you've already made a decision, you've had the talk, you know, but then before it's all said and done, you know, they bring home a stray, and do them on the couch right in front of you, you know, while you're upstairs, pillows on both ears, trying not to hear it. That's what that's what winter does to us, man.
This is winter. Don't you forget about me.
I tell you what, it rained so hard this afternoon when I was leaving the house up in North Seattle and driving down in the town, and traffic was just a nightmare because, you know, there was sleet falling and cars were going by me with like an inch of ice on them. And, well, I don't know what you drove through. It wasn't as bad as me. But listen, before we move on, I want to shout out to a friend. You know, the band's playing tomorrow night. I don't know what you're doing tomorrow night, Kev, but I know you're a metal guy, but if you want to hear some old school, old boy, dinosaur rock and roll.
Yes.
The Impalers are playing tomorrow night.
I heard their singer's kind of a jerk.
He's a dude. I was going to say douche, but I changed it up in a fear in the last
second. He is a dude.
He's a dude. Just a dude.
I'm a dude. He's a dude. He's, we're all dudes. Dude. Hey.
A friend of mine, Joe Girasi, Joe hanging in there, buddy. Joe's fighting the big C, doing what he's got to do and doing the rounds, you know, the chemo rounds. Joe and Tara won't be able to make it tomorrow night, but Joe, we're thinking about you, buddy. Hope you're doing well. Hang in there. Proud of you. But the band's playing tomorrow night down at the Muck, the Mighty Mighty Muck, Muckleshoot Casino. There's my pre-plug, and if I get in trouble with the boss, tough.
How many fistfuls of dollars are you going to be spending on the slots?
The slots? I don't gamble.
You don't?
I don't gamble. I made a bet with God. Well, no. I made a bet with a bookie. That was my problem. If I'd have made a bet with God... If I'd have made a bet with God, I'd have just, you know, stiffed God. I made a bet with a bookie. You ever hear that story? I made a bet with a bookie. I was probably about 23 years old at the time, maybe 22. And I was tending bar at a place in Baltimore, and I worked for a bookmaker. Little neighborhood tavern, unassuming, you know, like 3 different beers on tap, nothing fancy. You know, drinks were served in a, you know what a highball is, right? A glass, the highball?
Of course.
We served shots and highballs because when we gave our guys, they came in for shots, their hands would shake so bad. If you put in a shot glass, it'd be an empty shot glass by the time it got their mouth in their hands. So we put shots in highballs. Anyway, I'm tending bar for this guy. This is the kind of place where on a Sunday evening, I kid you not, Kevin, on a Sunday evening, I would be tending bar in this quiet little place, maybe 5, 6, 10 people at the most ever. And guys would come in, and if they had a good night, they'd buy a beer and give me a $5 bill, and I'd give them like, oh, I don't know, $702 change. You know what I'm saying?
Nice, yeah.
And
if they
had a lousy weekend, their beer cost $1,002. And by the end of the night, I probably had 5, 10K in cash.
Wow. Varied
from Sunday to Sunday, you know. But that's just the kind of bar it was, and I just 10 bar. The end of the night, the owner would come downstairs and he'd ring out the receipts for the night on Sundays. And, you know, he'd take out what was supposed to be in there and take what wasn't supposed to be in there up to his little safe in his office.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a loaded, it was like a Glock 9, I think it was. I never had to use it, never touched it. But there was a loaded Glock 9 sitting on top of an ice machine. Like there was about 2 inches of clearance between the ice machine and the bottom of the bar. So like facing the customers directly across from the register, there'd be a loaded gun sitting there. If anybody ever wanted to come in and roll us over on Sunday nights, because most of the neighbors knew what we were doing.
sleaze bags.
It was old school. You know, it was nice old guy. Didn't do nobody no harm.
There you go.
You know, just guys. You know, guys making bets. And I made a bet on a Monday Night Football game, and I bet the over. Okay. And the over is, you know, the over is, right? Because more than a total of points scored by both teams. The over was 44, and it was a Dallas Cowboy Miami Dolphin Monday night game. Back when Dan Marino was playing, you know, mid-80s, Dan Marino was playing, or early 80s, Dan Marino was playing for the Dolphins. Danny White's the quarterback for the Cowboys. Both teams are doing great. It was a great year for both of them. So I bet the over, 44. It was 7-0 at halftime. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. It was a week before Christmas, and I'd bet like $300, I think it was. Well, no, I was down $300, so I bet $300 on the game. So if I lose, I'm down $600. If I win, I'm even, right? I was chasing the weekend. I mean, I'm not a big gambler. I'm making, you know, $20 bet here, $50 bet there. But I lost every college game on Saturday and the early games on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm losing my shirt. It's Monday Night Football. I bet $300 on the over, Dallas-Miami. If I win, I'm even, walk away, learn my lesson. 7-0 at halftime. I need 44 points. I need 43 points. I'm like, I'm dead in the water. I mean, 45, because over was 44. Dead in the water. I leave the bar. I'm going home. I'm just, where am I going to get this money? Where am I going to get $600? You know, it's a week before Christmas. I haven't bought my girlfriend any Christmas presents yet. I got rent money, but it's due on the first. Well,
you're doing good.
Yeah, I'm done really. It's 7-7 at the end of the third quarter. I'm thinking, I ain't got a prayer. I'm going to lose. I'm sitting by myself in my apartment, just depressed and worried, scared. All of a sudden, they scored a touchdown. It's 14-7. Then a minute later, they scored another touchdown. It's 14-all. And then with like 2 minutes to go, Dallas scores. And it's 21-14. I'm like, wait a minute. It's 21-14. Stuff's happening. And the Dolphins throw a touchdown pass with a minute 40 left. And If they score this touchdown, it's 42 points. It's 21-all if this touchdown counts. But the guy got bumped out of bounds. The receiver got bumped out of bounds and came back in and made the catch. And the referees are talking in the middle of the field whether they're going to count it or not. And I'm on my knees in front of the TV at this point.
You know, please.
And I'm on my knees praying. I said, God, if you give me this, because if he scores, it's 21-all, and next field goal gives me 45 points for the game.
Yeah.
And I win. I come back from nowhere. And as I say, dear God, if you give me this, I'll never make another bet as long as I live. And as the words left my lips, the referee's arms went up in the air. Touchdown was good, 21-all. I couldn't even tell you who kicked the field goal to win the game. Didn't matter if it went to overtime, unless it ended in a tie, I'm good. I pulled the bet out. God gave me that as soon as it left my lips.
That's awesome.
Gambled since. Haven't made a bet since.
Wow.
I do not gamble. So when we play the Muckle Shoot tomorrow night, I will not be gambling.
Fair enough, man.
Yep. I learned my lesson. Plus, my wife won't let me gamble. My wife's a firm believer that luck is for important things. Health and family. You know, good fortune should not be wasted on monetary stuff. So anyway, I'm a wuss, so that's why I don't gamble. Let's see, we're going to talk. Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what we're going to talk about tonight. What are you going to do when you die? Something lighthearted.
I'll be dead.
Are you an organ donor?
Of course, yeah.
Are you? Yeah, me too. Me too.
I mean, I'm not going to be using those parts.
That's what I'm thinking.
I don't want to be greedy. I don't want to be a hoarder. What am I going to do?
Wouldn't it be great if you could help somebody out? Wouldn't it be great if you could make the difference, like somebody's eyeballs or your heart, or, you know, I'm an organ donor. I've ridden a motorcycle for about 25 years, and it's a morbid thing to say, and I, you know, knock wood, but heaven forbid if there's ever an accident, somebody doesn't see me, turns in front of me, cuts me off, whatever. I'm a full-on organ donor. Whatever I got, somebody can use, take it. I don't worry about open casket. I don't worry about that.
Spike, here's the thing. When I die, I'll be an organ donor. But while I'm alive, I'm happy to be an organ seller.
You'd like to? Oh, so,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say you donate your organ as often as you can.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought that's what you were going to say.
No, black market, I'll sell a kidney.
Wow. You know, there was a story a couple weeks ago about prisons were thinking about letting inmates sell organs.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's dangerous, man.
Wasn't it something to do with like they would get out of prison sooner?
Yeah.
It's really dark.
Yeah. If you want to hop out of prison on one leg, we'll sell that leg. I don't know. But if they had an organ, like a liver or a kidney or part of your liver, whatever, I'm not sure what you can donate and live. I don't even know. One eyeball, patchy. But they would let guys out. Yeah. But the reason I ask is this. You know how many people donate their body to science on a regular basis? It's like 20,000 people a year donate their body to science. You know, I mean, and that's not organ donation.
Yeah.
You know, it's, cremation's become much more popular than burial. The idea of burying folks in a cemetery somewhere is changing. We're evolving away from that. That was always a traditional thing to do. Nowadays, cremation is much more popular. You can actually have your remains put into like the root ball of a tree, like when you cremated and planted, so that this tree grows with you being a part of the nutrients that feed this tree.
What do you want to happen? You want to be burned?
There's a term for it too. My wife told me, but it's a gory term for cremation. The industry insiders have a really gory term for it.
Is that what you want?
I've never thought about it. I think so. I don't want to be in a ground somewhere. I don't think I want to do that. You know, my biological dad passed away when I was very young. My parents divorced when I was early. My dad, he passed away when I was very young, and he had remarried, and he was laid to rest in a cemetery in Baltimore. And his wife bought a double grave, right? You know, side by side couples. And he's had a beautiful headstone with his memory there, you know, and a space for his wife next to him, my stepmother. Well, she, you know, was a young woman when he passed away. My dad passed away when he was only 31 years old. And she, of course, as she should have, you know, lived a life, fell in love, got married, moved on, moved to Texas. Meanwhile, my dad is sleeping single in a double bed, as they say, you know. He's back in Baltimore, where none of the family is anymore. And nobody ever goes to see the grave or visits it or anything. I wouldn't want that to happen to me. I would want to be forgotten like that. I'd rather be on somebody's mantle.
Sure.
Or in a locket around one of my daughters or both my daughters' necks, heaven forbid. In a bullet casing and shot into the sky. Remember when they put Scotty up on the space shuttle and launched him into space, right?
See, I don't want to be cremated or buried. I want my rotting corpse to just lay
around the house.
Yeah, lay around and like weekend and buried by rats and birds.
Dude, no, come on, that's awful. I want to be a Halloween decoration.
Yeah.
That gets better year after year after year.
Yeah, move over, Spirit Halloween. We got Kevin Deers.
Well, we should make a wax dummy of you and then sell that.
I'm down.
There's no
income streams.
So when 20,000 people donate their bodies to science, right? And there's really no federal regulations overseeing it because body parts can be bought and sold for profit on the open market. I swear to God. There's a special agent, Paul Mika Johnson, an investigator for the FBI's Detroit division, has spent the last decade looking into what he calls a vast gray and black market of dead human bodies. The Uniform Anatomical Gift Act is a statute adopted by 47 states, is one of the few regulations governing the non-transplant tissue industry. It outlines the standards for body donation, and most significantly, it requires the donors or their loved ones must provide informed consent before donations take place. These consent agreements between donors and tissue banks, they're called tissue banks, that's who buy these, typically stipulate that the body will be used for research and education. But what that means in practice can vary. Medical research and education, particularly education, is a vague term. It's not clearly defined, even in the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, the UAGA, says Johnson. The misleading of families across the industry is quite common. So, I mean, what happens to folks if they sell to a shady organization? What I envisioned was, this is from a family member. What I envisioned was him being in some medical facility. I just thought, what a great candidate for them to learn about the results of alcoholism and what it does to a body. Then this her beloved's body was eventually sent to a biological research center in Phoenix, Arizona, which then sold his remains to the Department of Defense. They told me specifically that my husband would be used as a car crash dummy in a simulated Humvee explosion.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's epic. I wanted something like that.
Hansen's husband's body was sold by Biological Resource Center founder Stephen Gore to the DOD without her consent. Court records showed that these donors were used in a variety of military and ballistics testing, with some resulting in the complete mutilation and desecration of a donor's body. They would see how bullets rip up a dead body, how bodies are, how like, you know, armor protects a human body from explosions. They were using cadavers to do this.
It's so metal.
That is so metal. when the FBI raided this warehouse in 2014, and the guy's name, I guess last name is Gore, which is perfect, right? Stephen Gore, the Biological Resource Center founder. When the FBI raided Gore's warehouse in 2014, they found condition of the donor's remains so abhorrent that agents required trauma therapy due to the disturbing graphic scenes they encountered in this warehouse. Gore pled guilty to illegal control of an enterprise for violating donor consent agreements and was sentenced to 4 years probation and 1 year in jail because there were very few laws defining ethical treatment of remains. No charges were filed relating to the warehouse's conditions. He cut up bodies with a chainsaw. He cut bodies with a bandsaw, Johnson says. He had a bucket filled with brown liquid that had, oh, no, I'm not going to read that. Had brains floating around in it, and even worse.
Read it.
No. As in the case with Gore, prosecutors had no way of charging his henchman, Rathburn, what a great name, for how donors' bodies were treated. Rathburn was, I'm being burned. I'm not donating my body to science. Wow. That's crazy.
I'm not donating my body to science. I'm donating my body
to the DOD.
I'm donating my body for entertainment. I want my body to be brought to one of those like monster jams, and I want Gravedigger to roll all over me.
Oh my God, man. Well, anyway, it's Friday night, Cairo Nights. We're off to a grand start. Let's lighten it up. Let's talk about vacations next. When we come back, we'll talk about Weekend at Bernie's. Where do you take a dead body on vacation?
Amazing.
It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back. Cairo Nights. This is Say What You Will.
Fast Way.
Yeah. Lisa Brooks is going to sit in just a moment because I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but Lisa shared with me during the commercial break that your mom donated her body to science.
Yeah, to the Penn State Medical School when she passed away. She said had wanted that for years.
Really?
So
and it was used for medical research or for medical practicing practitioners?
Assigned to medical students.
Wow.
And I don't know if they probably don't have enough cadavers for, you know, each student to have one like they hope to. But I think a group of students is assigned.
Oh.
Sylvia got to take them through their... Yeah. And then when they were finished, they cremated Sylvia and we got her back.
So, at no charge? I mean...
At no charge, yeah.
Oh, so, if you were planning on being cremated, if you're not in a bit of a rush, if your next of kin aren't in many hurry to have somebody on the mantle, donate your body to science. Yeah. Make sure it's a reputable company, and you get the... thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And I had that story, and it was full of so many horrific details, but there are organizations that do good work. With donations, universities like Penn State, like your mom was donated to?
I'm sure the University of Washington Medical Center has some opportunity for that.
The article that I quoted has a gentleman who's the founder of Research for Life. It's a non-transplant tissue bank based in Phoenix, Arizona. He says, I don't think we can ever lose sight of the fact that there are human beings that have so graciously donated their body to the advancement of medicine. Whole body donation to my organization and others through the wonderful gift of donations, made it possible to have the innovative medicine and techniques that we have today.
So, yep.
It's not all buckets full of body parts.
Oh, no.
You know, that story was like, oh.
Very bizarre story.
Yeah, donated to the Department of Defense. I see the value.
Yeah, I know.
You know, maybe those could ever save lives.
Maybe. I don't think saved is what they were looking for.
Well, but they were testing, like, armor. To find
right.
out what, and maybe they were able to make better armored, you know, military gear to save.
Possibly.
We can only hope. It's horrible. Let's better subject. Have you got another? You got a minute?
Sure. Yeah.
You're getting pretty morbid there, Spike.
I know. Let's just lighten the mood. I'm sorry, but I was fascinated that your mom had actually done that.
Yeah.
When you take a vacation, are you the kind of person who wants everything planned out? Do you want to have an agenda for every minute to make sure that you maximize every second?
Oh, no.
And get the most, or are you the kind of person who's supposed to lay low?
Well, it's a vacation. It's you're not going to school. So some ways you learn more, I think, by wandering around than by having every single thing planned out for
fair
you.
Enough.
Tell it to my girlfriend.
Because there are people who don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah.
If we could queue up Aerosmith for after the break's over, that'd be great.
Okay.
There's two ways to take vacations. You can either, when we talked about this with Jack Stein a couple of days ago, and I was asked him, how do you like to take vacations? And some people just want to go and unplug their phone and sit in a chair on the beach and have people hand them drinks and relax, because that's what vacations are supposed to be for. And then there are folks who want to go see some place they've always dreamt of seeing. So you want to go to Italy and go to the countryside, or maybe Rome or Venice and do the gondolas through the canals of Venice. But I've traveled before with people who are just so driven to make sure every second counts. And we got to be up at 5:30 to catch a bus out to the county. We just got here. No, but we got to get back on the bus because we're going over somewhere else. And you don't really ever get to stop and enjoy anything because you're so overbooked.
Yeah, I think a mixture of those would be probably the best vacation, at least for me, because there are some things, like if there's a museum tour that only happens at like 9 in the morning,
right.
You know, you got to see that.
Do your research.
Then give yourself downtime.
Yeah.
To enjoy just being in that place.
And smart vacationers book themselves open windows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go to this town and we'll have that tour. We'll see that church we want to see. But give ourselves time to wander and look in little shops and find a cafe.
And sleep.
Or rent a bike or sleep. Yeah, just let me
just
sleep.
I want to sleep.
I know. My wife's I get up and go and go and go. And when we get on vacation, and I just want to sleep.
Sounds like an extra job. Like, you come back from your vacation and
you're beat.
You're like, wow, I just worked a second job.
From your vacation.
And
right?
Some people feel like that's a success, though.
Oh.
When you come back and you have seen, as I crammed more into 7 days and you wouldn't believe all the things we saw. Because we've been to Ireland a few times, my wife and I. And she kept us going. But I've seen so much of the island. I've seen the entire country, I think, at one point or another. You know, one year we'd go over to Galway and then head south through the Cliffs of Moher, and then the Dingle and the Ring of Kerry and all those points on the south that are so picturesque, and cliff sides by the oceans, and then castle after castle after castle. And at the end of the week, I was going home, and I'm just like, ugh, I go back to work tomorrow. And she's just, you know, top of the world.
Huh.
I think you're right, though, a mix of the two.
Well, it sounds like you're more of an introvert, and she may be more of an extrovert.
Me? No. I can't. I will talk to anybody anywhere at any time.
You're very good at that. Yeah,
thank you.
That's true.
Have you seen him on stage?
Yes.
With the Impalers?
But
that is not an introvert.
Being on stage has nothing to do with being an introvert
really?
Or an extrovert.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
All right.
No.
Interesting.
But in person.
So that's an interesting point, too. How do introverts be so well, so performative?
Introverts, I'm an introvert,
okay.
And I also have
a performed
on stage.
Okay.
It's different. It's just a different experience because you're sharing part of yourself, part of your soul, part of your heart.
And you've got a mission on stage.
Have to interact
with the audience.
Everybody. You connect with them, but you don't have to have a personal conversation with everybody.
My wife often gives me grief because I can't not say hello and engage everybody. Oh. I'm in line. I'll start talking to people around us in line.
That's nice.
I can strike up a conversation with anybody, anywhere, anytime. My daughters hate it.
You're the anti-Seattle freeze.
I am the Seattle thaw.
Yeah.
I am the one-man thaw. And after this afternoon, I could use a little thaw. It was brutal out there today.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you. Lisa's probably got the best plan. A nice mix of of doing your research. I'm a big fan of Rick Steves, his travel books, his travel videos. He's made an empire out of making sure that if you do get to go see someplace you've always wanted to see.
I love Rick Steves.
Right?
And he's an Edmonds guy, right?
Yes, he's an Edmonds guy, and he's a weed proponent.
That's what I
hear.
That guy was
on it before it was legal. And I'm not going to say he was maybe thinking about it before it was legal.
You've been around. You ever smoke a doobie with Rick Steves?
I have not. That there is a true Northwest experience that I'd like to have someday. I really would.
There you go.
But yeah, research where you're going. See the things that, you know, trust other people's experiences. See the things you shouldn't miss, the things that are worth seeing. And they'll tell you where to avoid, too. Some of the real cheesy touristy traps and, you know, where you go to a little town and every shop has the exact same things for sale, that kind of thing. But like Kevin said, too, man, just make time to relax. When you want a nap, take a nap, man. You're on vacation.
When you want to smoke a doobie with Rick Steves, you smoke a doobie with Rick Steves.
And then you'll take a nap afterward.
Yep.
And you can never leave Edmonds and have the best vacation of your life. Great little town.
They need to name like Rick Steves OG Kush or something like that.
I call it around the world without ever leaving the couch.
Yes.
Rick Steves OG. Oh, let's reach out to Rick Steves.
I'm sure he already has.
I'm sure he probably already has one.
He already has had people try to like use his likeness for it. So,
speaking of travel and great works of art, when we come back, I'll tell you how sharing Renaissance art with his students got a principal fired in Florida. Of course, it's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Kevin Deers and Lisa Brooks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. So a lot of stories in the news lately about kids and education and parents' rights. Today, the U.S. House of Representatives passed their parental rights bill. And it's designed to make sure that parents have a say in what their kids are taught in school. And I have no problem. In fact, I think far too few parents are involved in their kids' education. You know, I've heard it said kind of smarmily. Is that right? Smarmily? If parents want to get involved...
Smarmalade.
If parents want to get involved with their kids' education, they should start with like a PTA meeting. Start by attending a parent-teacher conference once in a while. But one of the culture issues that's being bandied around in politics these days is, you know, what a kid should be taught in school, what and when it's appropriate to teach kids various things, like the Florida law about, you know, they call it the Don't Say Gay law. And it's basically designed to not have various points of view introduced to a kid too young in their life. Same thing with, the pushing back on CRT, critical race theory, like it's some horrible thing that teaches little white kids that they should be guilty because all the horrible things that happened to African Americans in our country's history. And they don't want any history taught at all because it might make some kids feel bad or guilty.
How dare you?
I think that stuff's really dangerous. Not to teach history is to not learn from the mistakes of the past. And this country is the best country on earth. I firmly believe that. But we've made our mistakes along the way.
Just a couple.
Just a few. And, you know. And there's always two sides to every issue, and there's strong arguments and valid points on both sides. I'll give you that. But the story from Florida just it breaks my heart more than anything else because it's a story about a principal being fired from his job in Florida because he during a segment with sixth graders. He was teaching a Renaissance art, and he showed the kids a picture of David from Michelangelo, and it's a world-famous work of art. It's a naked man, the statue of a naked man, with anatomically correct.
Fully naked?
Fully naked.
Whoa.
With his twig and berries, as they say. You know, with the whole cluster of grapes there, whatever you want to call it. And a parent complained that the reason that the parent complained, usually when this Renaissance art segment is taught to these kids in sixth grade, Usually when this is taught, a permission slip is sent home, or a letter is sent home to parents saying, hey, we're going to cover Renaissance art. In Renaissance art, nudes were a prominent part of Renaissance art. You go to the Sistine Chapel, right, in Italy, speaking of traveling to Italy, and you go up there and there are naked cherubs and naked women. You know, some of the greatest works of all time, the classics, the masters.
Tear them down.
Was that what they're going to do? I mean, is that what they're going to call for? So this teacher, or this principal, was teaching a sixth grade class on Renaissance art, and they through a series of miscommunications, they didn't send the notice home that the Renaissance art segment of art history may contain some nudes. And they showed a picture of David, and the teacher was in trouble, and the parents insisted that this principal, rather, who was teaching the class, either resign or be fired. So they resigned. Or no, I think they were fired. They refused to resign because that's asinine. And they fired the guy. And it breaks my heart that we can't have any sense of perspective. We can't be nuanced about anything. How can we not explain to parents that it's okay to see a naked body in the context of art? It's not pornographic. David, Michelangelo's David isn't pornographic. You know? What do they call them? Rubenesque women of portraits of full museums everywhere have pictures of big naked ladies. I think, you know, filthy is in the eye of the beholder and in the heart of the beholder. It breaks your heart. In fact, you know, all these book bannings, right? There's a parent in Utah that says the Bible contains pornographic passages. And if you're going to ban books about gay sex in the school libraries, ban the Bible. I mean, it's that's what we're getting to.
Anything can be pornographic if your mind gets to it.
There you go. I'm living proof.
Yep.
Sludge is in the mind of the beholder. It's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Kevin Deers. We're going to play a little best of for you because it's been a long week. I hope you enjoy it. We have some topics that you're going to enjoy. I promise you. Some lively discussions took place. Here's a few of them coming back for you. Be back right after these.